The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
You're listening to Wrestling to the Max.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
This is an exclusive
pay-per-view review.
How you like that?
Gary Vaughn, Sean Garmer, and Paul Leeser.
To remove much of the surprise of the NXT Universe, you were sitting front row for the main event tonight. Talk to us about why you're here at NXT TakeOver.
Why would I not be here at NXT TakeOver? I don't know if you've been following me the past few years and what I've done. I've traveled the world, won every championship there is to win, grown brands, become a bit of a franchise player. What is the next logical step? Where the best superstars are in the world. And what's the top prize? The NXT Championship. And that is exactly what I want. And if that's not clear enough for you, Drew McIntyre has signed with NXT.
So are you coming with me?
Welcome, everybody, to Wrestling to the Max's NXT TakeOver Orlando review, and we are here and brought to you by W2Mnet.com. That's right. If you want to go find out more information about us or a lot of other great things, you need to go check out that site. It gives you all the information in the world of wrestling, plus a lot more. Also, hey, if you like what we do, then make sure you go check out Wrestling to the Max on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever you use to do podcasts. Go check it out and subscribe now. I'm your host, Gary Vaughn. Of course, with me is Mr. Sean Garmer.
What's up, everybody?
And Mr. Paul Leeser.
Hey-o.
And boy, guys, we have a show for everyone. We have an NXT TakeOver, which means it's usually pretty special. Usually it's something that we really love talking about and we get excited about every year and coming into this one. And, you know, once again, I mean, I think we have some pretty topical things to get into. So I'm thrilled about it. I hope you guys are too. I'm going to start this thing out by basically, you know, letting everybody know that we do an NXT review every week. If you're a first-time listener, maybe you just saw this somewhere. We do cover NXT every week, so make sure you join us for those episodes. But guys, let's start this thing off, and let's talk about how they got this show started. We have this takeover basically began by getting into this big tag match that we had between Sanity and, of course, all these other lovable people, except one. That one is No Way Jose. No Way Jose got attacked in the pre-show, basically getting taken out by Sanity, and they didn't want him to be a part of it. So they left Ty Dillinger out to dry, along with Roderick Strong. And we had Ruby Riott as well. So these three were coming into this match. A lot of people thought that we were going to get, you know, a situation where we're going to have a 4-on-3. That is not the case, though. Cassius Ohno appeared at the end and said, hey, you guys aren't getting into the ring without me. And now you got the, you know, back to an even playing field, and the match starts. And boy, there is a lot to get into, a lot of different spots here that you guys, I know, will, you know, probably want to talk and expound more about. But I want to say this just to kind of give you everybody some highlights. We had Cassius Ohno doing a pretty decent job here in showcasing his abilities and what he is. And we also had a lot of interaction between Ruby Riott and Nikki Cross. I think we expected that. I think it's kind of a preview of things to come with those two. So they did a really, really good job here. And, of course, you know, really, let's be honest, Sanity did their best to show that they are dominant. And they did that quite a bit in this match, despite the fact that Ty Dillinger got his, you know, hero moments, but still yet unable to claim the victory here. Sanity does walk away the victors. I think that's what we were expecting for the most part. But I don't know, Paul. I mean, how did you feel about this match overall?
I thought this was a terrific opener. Fast paced, lots of energy. I think it's everything you really wanted on that front. There's moves flying across everywhere, tons of big spots. MVP for me, though, was Killian Dane. They really booked him to look damn near unstoppable for most of the match. And even though he gets the finish here with a little bit of help from Wolf, like, I thought he was incredible in this. And, you know, everybody else to their credit, too. Roderick looked good. I thought Ono got in his good spots here and there. And they really spent a lot of time, too, on the Nikki Cross-Ruby Riott dynamic, too, which I found very interesting just because you won't always get that in this sort of match, right? And if you listen to our WrestleMania review, you'll hear me talk about how much the women felt like an afterthought. This is a complete opposite in this. Like, they were either the focus or arguably, you know, the main point they wanted you to take away from this was that these two are going to have a lot of problems going forward. And I think they did very well on that front.
I think you got the gist of them having a lot of problems. You didn't get a lot of in-ring time with them, which I was kind of disappointed in.
I thought you had big spots, though, between them that really just, like, wow, they're killing each other out there.
Oh, no, yeah, you definitely had the big spots, but I thought you would have had them square off more because these are certainly two that look like they're made to go at each other. And, you know, I was surprised that they did the it seemed to work, but I was surprised that they did the hot tag for Ty instead of having Ty do the face in peril hot tag of somebody else. But the crowd was really amped for when Ty did come in. He looked great. Like you said, Kelly and Dane looked great here, too. You know, Roddy had his moments where he was just going wild. And, you know, so I think on the face side, I think everybody had one time where they shined. I think it was certainly built around Killian Dane and Nikki Cross on the other end. And Sanity wind up winning, thanks to Killian Dane, which...
One week at Angel, baby.
Yeah, we all expected it with Ty taking the pin. So, once again, we have to ask, is this Ty's time?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think he goes?
I mean, you can't put everybody on SmackDown, but, like, you already got somebody else, you know, three other people that might be going from this show to SmackDown, so it's like, would you put all four of them on SmackDown from the go, and only have the Hardys on Raw, and I don't know who else should you bring it up to put on Raw? I mean, I guess, you know, obviously you have Finn coming back, who's basically like a... because he was almost, like, never there. I wonder, I mean, both shows need mid-cards, so, I mean, he could work there, just, you know, I don't know.
He just seems so much like a SmackDown guy to me. It's weird to say that, but he just does. I think there's some other people going to SmackDown that I could probably even say, you know what, I'm okay if they go to Raw. But he's the one guy I kind of would like to just a pencil on SmackDown for some reason. He just kind of feels right there. But, you know, the people love this guy, and he may do just fine on Raw if he does, you know, end up on that roster. I'm completely happy with whatever. I just want this guy to move on and do something else because he definitely deserves to be on one of the main rosters. You know, put a lot of time in NXT. It's time for him.
People are chanting 10. I mean, I don't know what else you want the guy to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. And my God, if Killian Dane keeps this up, I don't know if we'll make it to next year's WrestleMania takeover.
Yeah. Sanity might need to be worried about somebody getting plucked from their team.
Yeah, in a major way. He's just amazing, and he did a really good job, and they love him. And I want to send one thing out to him. Only one tip. My wife says, shave your back, Killian.
So did that crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I hope Albert was smiling somewhere in the back, too.
See, like, I think people can kind of handle, you know, chest hair or whatever, but, like, back hair is just weird. Like,
yeah. It is kind of weird in wrestling because you're just not used to seeing it. But, hey.
It's kind of weird on anybody. Like, who just walks around and you go, oh, man, that he looks sexy with that back hair.
I wear a V cut backwards in my personally. No. No, I'm just joking. I don't have that much back hair, if at all. Dear God, I definitely don't have
TMI. TMI, Gary.
I mean,
shape your back, Gary.
I don't have like that. Trust me, I'm not like that. Definitely not like that. I'm very sparse, but you know, at least I have it on top of my head. That's what matters.
Yes. You won't be like
but
me,
you know what? Honestly,
bald, so.
Well, I honestly, I say that, but I'm gonna. I have the crown of my hair. I'm gonna lose anyway, eventually. So I'm just saying, right now, as we speak,
we're all getting old, hair. Gary.
Exactly, I mean, and it probably true. about two years, I'll probably be like, I wish I had more. Kurt Angle, give me some tips, Kurt Angle. But anyway, let's talk about the fact that you know we had some other great things take place on this show, and you know we want to get into some of these other matches that I think are very interesting. One of those matches is the next match on the card, though, and this is, of course, we have a guy that we've seen once before, but it's been a while since the UK tournament. But Andrade Almas takes on Aleister Black. That's right, he is here. And can I say before I even talk about anything, I loved his entrance. I love his music. They did such a good job on his music. I wanted to rock
out. If only Bray Wyatt could go that occult, imagine.
Oh, God.
Can we talk about entrances real fast? Because I feel like this is something that NXT, since Finn Balor has taken off, has really focused on. If they want you to be a big star or a big act, they put together this kind of entrance for you. And obviously, we're going to have to see if Aleister keeps this going forward into NXT tapings and whatnot, but like this felt like something very central to his character, rising up from the fog and everything like that. So do you think they keep this? And I mean,
they need
to.
That's like, part of his thing.
Do you feel like this is something that NXT is going to continue to do, though, is these big entrances to really show you, like, hey, this is a guy that we're hoping to pin our hat on?
Well, I mean, for the takeovers, we've kind of always seen them do the big entrance for certain people, right? So, like you're saying, it's would they do this entrance every week on NXT? Or, you know, the weeks that he shows up?
There's that, but I mean, I think whenever we get to the main event too, like you see it for Bobby Roode, you see it for Shinsuke Nakamura, you saw it for Finn. Sanity has a big entrance too. Like these are big acts.
Yeah, Sanity with the eye black, I thought was cool.
Oh yes, we didn't talk about that. I love that.
But like, there's a formula that they seem to be creating right now, where these big acts that they're either want to be the top of the card or that they have big plans for long term or whatever. They built in this entrance factor to him now, which is something they haven't always done. Like, you see big entrances once in a blue moon or WrestleMania or whatever else. But for NXT, there's something in the mathematic formula down there where if you want to be a big name or big guy in our company, you get the cool entrance or you get the big entrance or the sing-along. Or whatever, like something that makes you jump out.
Well, the music is also key. Like, you know, there a lot of the talent has interesting music or music mm-hmm. you can bob your head to or whatever. You know, that's also key factor on 205 Live. Some of those guys have some pretty hit tunes, you know. But, I mean, it's a thing I think that they realize with, like, you know, when you had Bray and you had The Shield and you had some other guys, NXT's technology wasn't there yet mm-hmm. for them to do. And at Full Sail, you still can't do all this that much, right? It's when you get in the big arenas that you can do, or even the smaller-ish arenas that are still bigger than NXT, you can do these kind of things. So I think it's partially that. As well, you're in the big arenas, you want to have the big entrances to make them feel like, oh, well, you know, you could see this guy on the main roster tomorrow or this girl or whatever. You know, I think that's part of it. It's something that they've realized, too, with imagine if Bray had been doing that entrance from NXT. You know, how much you would have been able to already have that for him or whatever, you know, like Asuka immediately, she comes in and she has the thing with the mask shows up and then she comes out and all the bright colors and the
flowing everything. Robes. Yeah.
It's so I think from that instant, like you're saying, the guys that are going to be, or women that are going to be your main players, you're going to get something that's going to hook them. And, you know, I still think Ember's sort of trying to find herself, but with just the contacts and the music, she's got something there. Mm-hmm. You know, she's got one of the best freaking songs in all NXT for me, but... you know, I still feel a little bit like she's cosplaying whatever it is that she wears, not necessarily embracing whatever that character's supposed to be. But, you know, that'll come with time. You don't always get the Aleister Black where it seems like he gets it from the moment he's walking out there. So, interesting on that front. You know, and speaking of the other guy in the match, we shouldn't let him, you know, mean nothing here. He's still wearing the stupid suspenders, but he's starting to grasp the character and the wrestling. Of course, he's always been a great wrestler, but he's starting to mold the wrestling to his character, right?
He's watching Naito matches, man, I'm telling you.
Yeah, well, definitely. You know where that's coming from. He's Naito light, but that's fine. You know, it's not in he's not in WWE, so you can steal that. That's totally, totally works for you. I think this is another match where I think his previous match that he had, which I forgot who it's with now, on the previous takeover was much better.
Roderick.
Yeah, Brown. I mean, him and Roddy had better chemistry, but he almost got a ton in this match. Mm-hmm. Almost to the point where it felt like the match just ended abruptly when Aleister Black does the cool putting his foot on his face and lifting him up, and then he does the kick. It is kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's it. All right. You know, but still, you know, Black looked good, and maybe he might have been one of those better served with a just give me a guy that I can whoop for 5 minutes and that be it, you know.
I agree with that to some extent. I think Almas looked great here too. I completely agree with all that. Everything was great. Everything's there. I think he's building towards something. I think you just need to work on the character side now that he's got he seems to have found whatever he was missing as far as his in-ring work was going. I think Aleister, the way you get that spin kick over is just by having it be that abrupt whenever he hits you with it. Same way they got that punch over the Big Show. So there's a lot of that going on here. I think the thing that struck me most was how frighteningly similar and how much they really let Tommy End bleed into Aleister Black here. Obviously, I think there's a lot of that hyped up here. But, I mean, we're talking about a guy who used to pal around in a tag team called the Sumerian Death Squad. Like, there's a lot of occult stuff going on in there, and it seems like the commentary really shadowed that he's got a ton of mental problems that we can pick at and sort of bleed out in a few feuds and whatever else you want to do with him. But I thought he looked good. I agree with you on the fact that this probably should have been better served as a 3-minute squash where he just comes in there, whoops the dude and all that, but then I don't think you get all the character stuff that he got to put in here too.
I agree with that because of the fact that Almas also, I think, has struggled. And we talked about this on the preview for this, the fact that, you know, him in this match is already a discredit for him, especially for the fact that Almas hasn't exactly been the biggest winner as of late. And by the letting him hang around in this match, by them letting him joke around a little bit in this match and kind of goof off against a guy that's kind of scary, I think it means a lot for Almas, especially for the fact that he's going to lose. So I can, in a way, I respect them giving them more time. Squash, sure, would have made Aleister look amazing. But I think everything you kind of said there almost looks good, and you also get a little bit more of understanding on this character of Aleister Black.
Yeah, I mean, the entrance helps with that, too, I think. And then, you know, you got his tattoos that are also very culty, so... I like that they mentioned that, too. Like, he has the tattoo that he feels like is just one tattoo that goes all over his body and all that kind of stuff. So, it's a little thing sometimes.
And the way he enters the ring, too, the slingshot over the top right into the meditation position. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on here.
Oh, and the freaking backflip from the middle rope into the meditation thing. That was great.
That was incredible. Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm really looking forward to more Aleister Black. Let's be honest. And the people that didn't know anything about this guy, I think they're ready. They want to know more. They want to see more matches. So this is a great thing. And I'm really looking forward to the future and seeing what they do with him. I want to mention also really quickly, though, that we did get some, you know, appearances by people like every year at TakeOver. Of course, they had Edge and his wife, who just got to the Hall of Fame, Beth Phoenix, you know, so that was super cool to have them at ringside. We also got a chance to see a guy that I did not think we'd ever see in a long, long time. That's Drew McIntyre, or better known on the indies, Drew Galloway. So that was a big shock to me. I don't know about you guys. I haven't been reading wrestling news as of late. I'm going to kind of, you know, wait until we get to WrestleMania. Thought it was very cool, though, to see him there. And I can't think of, is there anybody else there that they showed? I can't think of anybody.
No, he was the only one.
Okay. So what did you think about that before we jump to the next match? Anything, have any thoughts at all, anything?
I mean, nobody, I think, knew that Drew had signed with him again. He signed. He cut a promo that's up on NXT's Facebook page and probably all over the social media about how he's there's more.
That's the promo in the intro as well of him saying he signed and that why wouldn't he come here? You don't know what he's been doing for the past couple of years. He's now a franchise player. Let's see what happens. So
yeah,
I put Riddle over on the way out and Evolve too. So good stuff.
It's amazing. It took me aback. I'm really, really happy for Drew McIntyre. Very, very happy. Let's move on and talk about something I was extremely happy about. And I think these two guys know where I'm going. I want to talk about this Triple Threat Tag Team Championship match for NXT. And we have the Authors of Pain walk in here as champions. And they're defending against a couple of tag teams here that really, I mean, honestly, have every right to have those belts. And that is, of course, DIY, a big fan favorite, along with the Revival, who a lot of people love as well. And I want to say this. I wasn't sure how much I was going to like it, especially at the beginning of the match. I was just kind of like, oh, it's going to be... By the end of this thing, I fell head over heels. I just thoroughly enjoyed this. I love the team, the mixed teamwork that we had here between DIY and the Revival. You know, each guy taking on the moves of the other tag team and working together. Mm-hmm. That was the one of the coolest things I've seen in a long time. I love that, you know, we get, you know, Razor having to go through a few issues. I think he got put through a table, but Akam stepped up by himself at times. They really tried to put the Authors of Pain out of commission. It just, they never could do it. And just the story here, everything involved, there's so much. I probably would spend 15 minutes introing this thing. Sean, I mean, what did you think? I completely loved this match. And we had the Authors of Pain retaining.
This was, I think we can safely say, the match of the weekend as far as WWE is concerned.
For me, it is.
This was insane. It was so awesome. I think that, you know, there's certainly a big dip that happens once DIY is eliminated and it's only AOP and the Revival, because, you know, then Authors of Pain are at the forefront a little bit more and you kind of see a little bit of, you know, the learning that they still have to do. But they look dominant all throughout. That submission spot where Gargano sits there and thinks about it. It's like that moment there is so great because he's sitting there thinking, it's like, why do I want to help this team that we spent so long trying to beat and whatever? And then the Revival too, but the Revival is so smart because they're thinking, well, we don't want to have to wrestle the big guys. Like, let's all team up and get rid of the big guys. And they also weren't too keen on wanting to tag in with Ciampa and Gargano either. It's so great. It's like those enemies that realize, crap, we got to work with each other. And this sucks. We don't want to, but we have to do it. And it's it was just wonderfully, wonderfully told, wonderfully done. Authors of Pain retaining. I think we knew. I think the out of the matches, the only one that was even a possibility, honestly, was Ember Moon winning. The other two title matches, I think we knew before the match even started what was going to happen. But they did a great job of making you want DIY to win, and the crowd got pissed when they were taken out.
Oh, yeah.
So much so that they turned on the match, I think. Like, they were not happy with anything they were getting.
Well, and then they turned Revival face.
Yeah. They only very briefly cheered for the Revival when it looked like they were going to win in the few spots that they got, but I think you guys nailed it. This thing tells a story like none other that I've seen across the weekend. DIY
it's
Revival.
It's amazing how these guys keep doing it every single time. Like, you go, there is no way they can top what they have done previously, and they do it again. Like, this is insane how great they are.
I'm going to say two things that... one of them I think might get a bit of a reaction from you two, but one, I think the Authors of Pain are young prodigies in their role. They get what they're doing, and within the storytelling with these two teams, they looked awesome. They were on the ropes when they had two. Once they got rid of one, they absolutely picked the Revival apart. I thought that was awesome. Two, I don't think the DIY should ever split. They are so great as a tag team that I think you hurt them more by splitting them up at this point.
I feel like they're going to get a singles run before they move them up, though. I just feel like they're just going to do it.
I think they should save it for the main roster if they're going to do it. But for now,
Gargano is such a, like, that, I mean, it's amazing the amount of reaction he gets. I mean, yeah, and obviously Orlando, he's huge there, but, like, the dude is made for babyfacedom singles run, you know?
They're both so great, right, at what they do individually. I think you stick them together and keep them as DIY, you have another hot tag team to bring up on two divisions that desperately need help, and especially experienced hands like this, who I'm sure are going to get a lion's share of the credit for keeping this together as it did, and you could argue that, too, by the crowd's reaction. But don't split them. Don't do it. As much as they might be tempted to do it, just don't.
You know what? To save the tag team divisions on Raw and SmackDown, if they were going to move up, I'll give you that. That's a good face tag team that can help either roster, could really do a lot of damage, and I think would really make some money. I think once they hit the main roster and they start getting over what they do here in NXT, that's a lot of t-shirts sold. That's a lot of people loving those guys. Do I think they should stay together forever? No, I want Ciampa to have his run. I don't care if he's Intercontinental Champion. I don't care if he's U.S. Champion. I want him to do something by himself. It's got to happen because Ciampa is too good to miss out on that opportunity. Gargano, he could do great.
How did I know?
Well, Gargano's great. Oh, yeah, but Gargano's awesome, and he could be an excellent Cruiserweight champion one day. But outside of that, I don't know. But
Cruiserweight champion, damn, just putting him
what's
down
wrong
that
with that?
Low, huh?
No, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's going to be lots of great Cruiserweights. Austin Aries is in that spot. Don't hate him. So,
but I think yeah. I just you have a babyface tag team on your hand that could be the next big tag team of all time. I'm telling you, they work so great together. I think the babyface reactions they get are up there with what the Rock and Roll Express were getting back in the 80s. Like, these guys, they're something.
They dwarf. I mean, we thought the American Alpha were great.
They
dwarf American Alpha. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I mean, honestly, DIY comes up. And they, let's say that they both got put on SmackDown, DIY might, like, just totally blow them out of the water. It's also just because you've got two guys that you can connect with, and especially with, I think Ciampa, you know, you might have some character that you got to develop there a little bit. But with Gargano, you immediately get it. Both of them are so great. They're not trying to live up to some Olympic whatever gimmick. They're them, and you get that immediately.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to hold Paul to this. I really would like to see that take place to an extent, because that means my guy Ciampa is doing good. Even if he's got Gargano with him, that's fine. If it holds up to the Rock and Roll Express. You act like it's
terrible for him to be there.
I just love Ciampa so much. I want him to be happy. So that's okay. And I want that to work. I want to say something about your first comment, though, about the Authors of Pain. That's interesting. And I think there's a lot to that. The Authors of Pain, to me, I'm a little surprised that the crowd wasn't just thrilled about it. I mean, I get it. They're heels, right? They're supposed to be. But I think those two guys, for what they are, for big guys, for everything that people say that big wrestlers like them lack, I don't see it. They have such a presence. Everything about them means so much to me because they really do present themselves in a great fashion in ring, out of the ring. It seems like they have a great chemistry when it comes to themselves and then working with the smaller guys that they work with. So, I mean, maybe you're right on this. Maybe they are prodigies. I don't know. All I know is, as we said, I love the Authors of Pain. I don't hate them at all. I don't have a problem with them. I love all three of these tag teams. Mm-hmm. When people were complaining, I think you talked about this, Paul, on our preview, that people were saying, why is this a triple threat? It shouldn't be a triple threat. It just needs to be DIY. It needs to be Ruthless Revival. That's the classic. That's gold. If you ask me, like I predicted, I thought adding the Authors of Pain would do just fine. It works just as good as just having two tag teams, three tag teams. It worked just as great. I loved it. To me, they won match of WrestleMania weekend. At least for WWE. I can't speak for Wrestle Circus or anybody else. So,
You know, and I want to talk about the new tag belts too, because I think I like them the best out of everything. They're absolutely beautiful. But to finish up on AOP, you know, I know a lot of people are probably going to try to draw, you know, parallels to the Legion of Doom. And I think there are some there. Obviously, I don't think they have the same charisma or that same look that those guys had that made them so great. And not to mention the fact that they went, you know, full ham and just beat the piss out of you for 20 minutes. But I think the Authors of Pain have a great future ahead of them. And to sell them, obviously, they have a long way to go still. They're still very young, but I think that they could be a really big team, too.
Yeah.
Certainly they could be. I mean, I think it's just you got learning to do for what they are right now. They are very good, and then they are growing into their roles, and I think that's totally fine. You also got the language deal, too, you know, that Hawk and Animal obviously didn't have. So that's another thing, but they're hateable. The crowd doesn't like them, and that means they're already doing their job, and that's good. So, you know, now it's who faces them, because, you know, the Revival, I think, is for sure. We're seeing them on SmackDown on Tuesday. If not, I don't know what you're doing, because they have nothing left to do. TM61, they're out of commission because, you know, Shane Thorne's hurt, or Nick, I don't know which one's the one that's hurt, but
I think it's Shane. So
there's your face tag team that I think was supposed to be the next in line. I mean, Heavy Machinery is kind of, they're now new. Getting going. I mean, and you can't have Sanity go against them because it's heel teams. I mean, so it's like, what do you do? Do you have two singles wrestlers tag? Or?
I think that's what it's time for. Is Roderick Strong and somebody else, or whatever you want to go with, a singles super team pairing would do well.
Yeah, but that's true. I mean, I don't know what they're planning on doing, but, you know, Roderick Strong with somebody that we don't know much about, or, I don't know, No Way Jose or something.
For one, the crowd really responded to Roddy, so hopefully that means he's going to start going somewhere. Obviously, that crowd knows him a lot more. But
yeah, Florida's familiar with him.
You know, Oh, I mean, it helps the European crowd is going to really go for him and everything. Oh, somebody that Cassius Ohno seemed like just a dude as far as from the crowd perspective. Now, he was doing some cool stuff, the somersault thing to the outside and all that. That was cool. He found a more fitting jersey for himself, even though I don't know why you have a Sacramento Kings jersey on and you're in Orlando, but, you know, that's weird. But,
maybe yeah. This is the way, if you wear a Magic, you know, jersey.
Yeah, he should have worn a...
Well, he probably was worried that Papa Shango would have came out if he would have worn a Magic. So he said, not doing that.
That's fair. I think that's a fair assumption.
That's fair.
Yeah. So, but yeah. Well, you know,
I really love the entrance attire for AOP for that match. That was pretty badass.
Oh. Yeah. The like death mask and the chainmail and everything. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you guys like the new belts?
Yes, I love all the new belts. Honestly, mm-hmm.
I think the tag team are my new favorite.
Yes, like the tag teams are the best ones.
Mm-hmm.
I think definitely. I like that they went with the same thing that the main roster. The women looks just like the men, and they don't have to be pink. Not every woman wants to go around wearing something pink. So I think that's really cool that they treated them the same. Except you know the women says women's on the top, and the men's doesn't. But you know you're not going to say the men's whatever title. It's just you mm-hmm. say that. Yeah. So you know.
Yeah.
And they've also officially now announced the women's tournament.
Yes.
So cool. I'm excited about that.
32. I thought they would do less for the women, so that's pretty cool that they're doing 32.
I really like that presentation a lot, too, where you have each of the champions up there talking about what a big deal this is. I think that really hit the point home.
And I think, you know, considering what happens in the next match, I think whoever wins that's the person that is primed to be that mover and shaker finally.
Yeah, that'd be super awesome. This is gonna be a really great tournament. I'm super stoked and ready for it, so we'll see when we get to that point though. Let's move on though. You know, you're talking about a women's tournament. Let's talk about the women's NXT title, and let's talk about the fact that Asuka, who has probably one of my favorite theme musics, I love that song. It's just awesome. Facing off against Ember Moon. And this is a match that we were really curious to see, you know, what would progress here. You know, would Ember Moon, you know, find her way to be the next NXT Women's Champion? Or, you know, would Asuka just take her out and just continue to move on? I think they put a pretty, you know, a good match on here. I think that they worked hard. I love the fact that, you know, Ember Moon did get enough offense, if you ask me. They kept playing off that she was eventually going to hit her finisher, but Asuka just continued to outsmart her, continued to find ways to be cruel. In fact, being more of a heel in this by using the referee to cause Ember Moon to lose. So, I mean, it goes back to what I keep saying about, you know, she seems to be getting onto that darker path day by day. And Asuka did it here again, and that's how she finds a way to retain her NXT Women's Championship. So, what did you think, Paul, overall?
I loved this match so much. From something that just came from great storytelling, they kept the pace going here. Action wasn't as great, but it was still absolutely on point. I think this is the closest you might come to seeing a Joshi match in the WWE's game. Hard strikes, really stiff suplexes. Like they were out there to put a number on each other. And Ember Moon with the blue eyes, like that was absolutely frightening. Like she red looked cool. Blue is frightening. Like she's ready to murder you just as much as Asuka is, I think. Eclipse is protected. She never hit it, much like how we have Kenny Omega over in New Japan right now. Never hit the one in Winged Angel on Okada. That's a big deal. Ember Moon gets just as much offense as Asuka, and Asuka had to go to the resort to cheat a little bit and throw the referee into the rope. So I love this top to bottom. I might have overrated a lot more than other people have. I gave it 4.25, but I love this match, bell to bell.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this match, too. It was a great match. I think I went with the 4 solid, but, you know, I think... outside of, I mean, Asuka probably saved Ember Moon's life with the jump, the crossbody, and Asuka had to move a little bit. If not, Ember Moon went crashing the floor. But outside of that, I think this was a terrific stuff. Just they were hitting each other. There was, and every time, you know, Asuka was going at it, Ember was getting something back on her. I love the video at the beginning too, with Asuka by the pool there, being very arrogant, very, you know, you could sense that heel turn's coming, right? She's being very into herself, knows she's great, knows that, you know, nobody can beat her, and feels that way that nobody can beat her. So, you know, Ember basically had to make her take her seriously. And by the end of it, that's how you felt, that Ember could have won that, but Asuka was just a little bit too resourceful using the ref there to make sure she got the win. And let's see if the crowd finally goes with that, or if she's just too awesome to hate, which that may also come into play as well. But I think that's okay. You know, even if she is too awesome to totally hate, as long as you get a bigger majority booing, you know, like you kind of get with AJ a lot of times, you'll be all right. And even if it's not Ember, if it's, you know, whoever wins the women's tournament that eventually dethrones her, I think you set wheels in motion to however you want to bring up Asuka, the main roster. You can, she's a dual threat now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, they need to see that. They need to have that opportunity to really get a feel on what she looks like as that major baby face and that major heel, because of the fact that, you know, she, like you said, she still got some other things she's overcoming, you know, the language and a few other barriers. And so I think that this is exciting, and I want to see it. I mean, I want to see it be even more and more every day, and for us to get that clear picture of what Asuka is going to be pretty soon here. And I think this was a heck of a match. I want to see, you know, what the next big match is going to take place. Let's move on and talk about the NXT Championship. And Bobby Roode walks in as your champion, and he is taking on Shinsuke Nakamura. And this is one where we were really looking forward to seeing how they were going to handle this, because, you know, Nakamura is supposed to be coming off an injury, and they're supposed to have Bobby Roode, you know, one of the most methodical guys. You know, I love the fact that when we were doing our WrestleMania preview, I think it was either Paul or Sean, I can't remember which one of you guys said it, but you said this reminded you a lot of Triple H and Seth Rollins. And I'm right there with you. I've always thought that, you know, Bobby Roode and Triple H kind of mirrored me, or mirrored each other in that that fact that they kind of really methodical. They work on things. They take their time. Mm-hmm. And that's what you got out of Bobby Roode. This is no different than usual. I think some people kind of came into this thing and, oh, this is going to be the most explosive, excellent match of all time. You were going to just, which it was a good match.
Well, the first one was, and I don't know why you would expect that, but.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just saying some people may, though, because of the big stage, right? It's supposed to be a major event and all that, but that's not what you get with Bobby Roode. You just get these good matches where he's very methodical. So at the end of the day, though, I mean, it takes Bobby Roode taking out that knee and working on it and putting Nakamura in a situation where he's kind of not at the top of his game. And you think that, you know, Nakamura still could win, but Bobby Roode does find a way to retain here. But I enjoyed it. I didn't hate it. I really kind of liked this match. What do you think?
I thought it was a good match. I actually liked their first match better, honestly. I thought that, you know, because Shinsuke had to sell the leg more in that first match, there was a lot more intensity going on there. These two just don't have, like, that great chemistry that some guys have with each other. You know, I just think that their styles kind of don't click, per se. This is also sort of a little bit different. It is more like an old NWA match, you know, which I just think for the time, I felt like this went long for the sake of going long. Like, I don't understand why NXT TakeOver shows now have to end at 10:30. Like, why? I don't know why this had to go 30 minutes, but I felt like it didn't need to. Like, again, I'm not saying this is a bad match. I just think that, I don't know, it just, for being a, you know, NXT TakeOver or main event or whatever, the other two title matches outshined it for me.
I agree with you that the other two title matches outshined it. And I agree with you that Bobby Roode and Shinsuke Nakamura do not click as far as in-ring wrestling chemistry goes. But this is another match that I thought absolutely destroyed the mold with its storytelling, right? And it started before the bell even rang. Shinsuke Nakamura comes out first. He's got the dueling pianos, which was awesome. And then he comes out and his very focused on interacting with the crowd, more so than he usually does just by going into the corner. He's walking up and down the aisles. He's, you know, touching people. He's letting them touch them. And then he gets in there. And then Bobby Roode comes out. It's all of his glory. Everybody's, you know, singing the song. And he's making it all about me. Never touching anybody, right? Which is classic heel, I know. But as far as the story they're trying to tell, where it's Bobby Roode's NXT versus Shinsuke fighting for we are NXT, I felt like that was two opposite ends of the spectrum that they demonstrated very well. And then they get in the ring, and they freaking put on this awesome storytelling first match in a way that I think, you know, like Sean said, this is such a work rate based era that we're in right now. I thought these two absolutely killed it with a storytelling first approach, because not only was Bobby focused on the knee again and doing everything he could to really work all that over, but it was a match geared to make Bobby Roode look strong, look super great, and every bit as glorious as he thought he was, and over somebody who had been dominant in NXT for so long. And even had, I mean, he had to go further than he did in the match with San Antonio with the super impact DDT to put him away. But I love that. And it's the clean win that TNA never gave him. Bobby Roode looks unstoppable coming out of this match. I think that's part of the reason I love it, because I've been a fan of his since like 2005. But I thought this was great. I love this more than their San Antonio match personally. I thought this was amazing.
I think part of it for me is, again, like, I felt like this is kind of where you got a little bit of the old Shinsuke, where like all the stuff he did to really make that injury look like it was this huge ordeal in the first match. When it came to, okay, I'm picking that same body part again, I felt like he lacked a little bit, you know. Which, you know, it's a knock. It's his knock thing that he has.
Right.
It's something that I feel like he's gotten better at since he's been in NXT. But, again, he has those moments where he, you know, because he's so focused on whatever it is he's doing. And, you know, obviously Shinsuke he's one of those guys that he doesn't deviate too much from his, like, this is what I do, these are my moves, you know. Perhaps he needs to go to the well and find some more. But, you know, I don't know. There was just something about the first match that I liked more, but I think this is a fine send-off for him, and, you know, let's see what happens when we get to the main roster, you know.
Yeah, I think for Nakamura, the knock on him, if you will, is certainly there, and I think it was very prevalent in the opening minutes. But I felt like as it got going, I mean, he never reached the injury. And the injury wasn't meant to be as crippling as it was during that first match, obviously, as it was in this one. And I thought that made sense within the story they were trying to tell you, too. But I think just there were moments in this I liked. There was this great armbar transition where they keep switching back and forth that I absolutely adored. I just thought this worked on every level. I went 3 3/4, which I think might be the highest I've seen across the entire internet. So.
Wow. Oh, man. You know, I think, you know, you guys have kind of said it all on this. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of both those guys. I think Nakamura is going to – he has a lot to offer. He's going to offer, you know, probably Monday Night Raw a lot, unless it is SmackDown.
I mean, both guys are – let's be honest. Both guys are about like the entrance is a huge part
of yes.
who they are. And according Bobby Roode, we got to be real honest with ourselves in saying that a big portion of why Bobby Roode is where he's at is that song and what it does for him, you know. Because it like the thing with Nakamura is right, like at least the entrance, the people singing along with him, whatever, he can match that in the ring when he wants to, right? Bobby Roode's style doesn't necessarily match that song and all the stuff you get out of that, right? It's almost mm-hmm. sort of it's almost the opposite. Right, you're not. He's not really glorifying, like the work rate is not being glorified. Bobby Roode in the ring, he is methodical, like Triple H. He's, you know, but this song is so magnanimous. It's not even like that cool, you know, whatever one. Like Triple H's music is obviously cool, you know, but mm-hmm. his is just. It's like so out there. So awesome that it's like he has all the Ric Flair without some of that extra flair, I guess if you want to call it that. That's there in the ring with Flair that you don't have with Bobby Roode. I think that's the only thing that I think it doesn't match. So that's why I think when you get his matches, people don't. Like, as soon as the bell rings, that intensity is not the same. Even though, I will say, the crowd was totally into this the whole time, mm-hmm. where I think the people watching were not so. Mm-hmm. So, I give them credit for that.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, and I'm okay with Bobby Roode being big because of, you know, his entrance and his music, and that's great, and all that. I mean, I just don't want him to be Fandango. You know,
he's not going to be on the we
no. One, he's better on the microphone than Mr. Curtis is. And two, he's so good at telling stories in the ring and out of the ring and bringing it all together. Like, I think you're right on in the fact that he's got parts of Triple H and Ric Flair. If there was a baby made in Evolution between those two with Bobby Roode, and he's just so good at a lot of things. I think people, especially of an older era, really miss, and that is laser-focused storytelling in a match, which is what old-school wrestling is predicated on most of the time in your bigger matches, is they're out there to tell you a story, not show you and wow you with all this athletic, you know, incredible athleticism that they can do, which, don't get me wrong, certainly has its place no matter what time frame you're in, but it's at such a fever pitch now that is what people expect in a main event. Bobby Roode subverts that with storytelling. And I think if you put him in there with the right guys, you could have a lot of magic on your hands still, even though he's not out there doing flips and whatever else that you're expecting these blended junior heavyweight to heavyweight athletes doing now.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's not Definitely. Him, so, you know.
Right, that is not his style. That has never been his style.
Yeah. I think... it's going to be interesting now of who he goes against, because we already saw him kind of dispose of Cassius Ohno. It's like, is this where Hideo Itami comes back? Or, you know, are you... Is somebody else, you know? This is where I say, I know you don't want it to happen, but I say, like, a Ciampa or Gargano is perfect for this kind of spot right now, where you don't have somebody... And you need that, like, big face.
I don't think they split... The DIY, no member of DIY will challenge for the NXT title before they do the split, if they do the split still. And I think they want that big match to be at Brooklyn, too, if they do it. So I would think you would go either with Roderick, you do Cassius again, or if you have Itami, you go ahead and fire Itami. Because he's been waiting in line, and I don't know... I think you have to be careful with that one. Just because I don't think you know how people are exactly going to react to him coming out and doing it and being launched right back into the main event scene that he never really was truly in. You know, he's on the threshold the whole time before he got hurt. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how this all shakes out and to see who Bobby Roode's next opponent is. I am very curious, and I think that they did a good job on this big show and this takeover because they have a lot of intrigue for what is next. Who is those next big opponents, and you know who's moving on from NXT from here? But you know that's what usually happens. This is the time when the turnover starts to happen, and you begin your new year. And I'm excited to see what that new year brings to NXT. So we'll have to see about that. But yeah, we've got to rate this thing and give it, you know, some, you know, of course, some number to it, and of course, some of our final thoughts on NXT TakeOver Orlando. So go ahead, Paul, give us your thoughts.
I love this show top to bottom. The lowest rated thing I have on here is Aleister Black and Almas at 3 stars, and then obviously the tag match 4.5. Like this is an amazing show. I originally had 9.5. I think that's probably a little high, so I went 9. But I absolutely love this show, just as good as San Antonio, which I gave the same rating to.
That's where, you know, Paul and I are going to differ because I wasn't that big a fan of the main event. But, you know, the other two matches, title matches, certainly held their own. And, you know, the 8-man tag was fun, and you know, Aleister Black had a pretty good debut. So, you know, I'm going to go with an 8 here, but this is still a really good show. Definitely worth watching. You know, until you get to the main event where you start feeling that time a little bit, the first 4 matches just really go by. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, you're right about that. You know, and this show, to me, it's hard because, you know, I wanted to put my expectations so high because every year this is one of the big shows to look forward to on WrestleMania weekend. Maybe so even more than WrestleMania itself at times. So watching this, I wasn't disappointed at all. I think they did a lot of good things here. I think everything for the most part had something that to really offer and offer to not only just for the current, but for the future as well. I give it an 8. I felt like everything was really solid. I really didn't feel like anything let me down. And I'm thrilled for the new face of Aleister Black. I'm really super happy that I got a chance to see that Elimination Triple Threat. And, you know, of course, both the women's and the NXT championship were amazing. So I think it's where I stand, though. I think it's good enough for me. So, all right, guys. Well, that is NXT TakeOver Orlando for us. Of course, if you want to find more information about us, maybe you even want to go check out that WrestleMania 33 review, make sure you don't forget to go check out W2Mnet.com. That's the place where you find that podcast and this one and a lot more that we have to offer you guys. We also are going to have episode 241, part 1. And part 2 this week, along with our Raw review, which is a big deal because this is the post-WrestleMania Raw review, along with SmackDown Live having its own review as well, and plus next week's NXT review. So trust me, there's tons of reviews out there from our show, and of course our regular episodes that are going to get into some news and some other big things going on in the world of wrestling. You're not going to want to miss a minute of that action. And don't forget to go subscribe if you haven't already to Wrestling to the Max. You know, do yourself a favor and do that if you haven't. So as that, we're out of here, guys. We hope you have a wonderful beginning of the week. Until next time, we will see you guys down the road. If you're not living life to the max,
not living life at all,
you know it.
Peace.
Later.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.